I needed to not skate by for once in my life, and they didn't let me.
At the end of the day, if you know that you don't feel good about the job, you got to be able to leave that behind.
They just kept asking me to come back, and I truly love Milwaukee and Southeast Wisconsin.
It's always great to be at WTMJ.
This is WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome to WTMJ Conversations. I'm your host, Libby Collins. It was December 2017 when former Milwaukee Brewers medical director Roger Kaplinger was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. In 2022, he retired after 33 seasons with the team, but he remains active supporting the Sina Magowitz Foundation and raising awareness about research and sharing hope for those who face those same challenges. And Roger, I got to ask you about you first. Were you always a baseball fan?
Not really. I grew up in Denver, Colorado. We had a AAA team there, but and that was well before the Colorado Rockies ever became into existence. No, I just, you know, it was, my family was huge Denver Bronco NFL fans, so I went to the opposite and became an Oakland Raider fan. And so, yeah, baseball wasn't really ever like top of mind.
So how did you end up working for the Brewers as medical director?
Yeah, so extremely long story. I went to a Division II school in Colorado and they Title IX football program there. And so my uncle was an NFL referee and he said, I know you really want to be a physician, but you should be this trainer guy. Because they're on the field, they have medical background, and so he hooked me up with some athletic trainers in the Denver area, went to school there at Metropolitan State University, got my undergrad there, and then I needed to do an internship to be a certified athletic trainer. Well, the Milwaukee Brewers AAA team, the Denver Zephyrs, were in Denver, and so everything happens for a reason, and so I got an internship with the Zephyrs, and then the next season they're like, hey, we want to hire you full-time, and so that's how it all started.
And that's how you ended up in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I was in the minor leagues for 9 years, and then I made it to the major leagues as a major league assistant athletic trainer, and then I became the head athletic trainer for the Brewers in 2002.
What's a job like that like? I mean, you're with the team all the time.
Yeah.
You're seeing athletes whose career depends on them being in the best physical condition every single day. It must be a really intense practice for you.
It is. You know, you have a great staff and team around you, and you all are on the same page trying with physicians, athletic trainers, strength and conditioning personnel, mental health, sports psychology people, nutritionists, and then your coaching staff in your front office. And you're all trying to, the ultimate goal is to win a World Series.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to have your best 9 guys out there every night. And it is challenging, but very rewarding. We've made some lifelong friends from baseball. But, you know, it does take a lot away. You know, you're away from your family. You know, you're on a road trip for 10 or 14 days, spring training for 7 weeks. So it's challenging, but, you know, you have a good support team at home, a great support team. And then you have, you know, your team at the Brewers.
And I would imagine there had to be at least a couple times in all those years where you had to sit down with an athlete and tell them things they wouldn't want to hear that would affect their career.
Yeah, I think those are hard conversations to have. One of my great friends who manages the Chicago Cubs told me, hey, instead of pulling someone in the office, let's talk to them on the field. That was a game changer, right? So I'm talking to a player about his health and what the diagnosis is, what the potential treatment options are, and what the prognosis is on the field. That's their office. Not sitting behind a desk saying, you know, you have this injury, you're going to have this surgery, this is your rehab. It makes it a little bit calmer and less anxiety for the player. And that's worked very well for me in my career. But yeah, those are difficult conversations. And, you know, at points in times, people are going to get injured. And that's an inherent risk of baseball just because you play it every single day. You know, you play 162 games in 181 days, and then you have, you know, 45 days of spring training with 30 games. So that's a lot to ask of individuals. And now we're understanding baseball a little better and periodizing and giving guys days off and saving their bullets, if you will, to actually make it through a major league season. And, you know, games count just as much as in April as they do September.
Did you always consider yourself to be in good physical shape? I mean, being around professional athletes all the time, you had to feel like, I got to keep up with these guys.
Yeah, it's challenging. Honestly, no, not really. You know, because you're just working so much. You're, you know, you're 12 or 15 hour days. Your eating schedule's off. Your sleep schedule's off. You're flying after games to different cities. I tell my wife, Jackie, all the time, like, I'm in better shape now after pancreatic cancer than I was previously. And it's a wake-up call, right? And I think there are some of my friends who are pancreatic cancer patient survivors that don't take that as a second chance in life.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
I was just like, I need a minute. I need a minute. I need to walk around the block here by myself.
Former Milwaukee Brewers medical director Roger Kaplinger talks about the moment he heard the diagnosis of pancreatic cancer.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with former Milwaukee Brewers medical director Roger Kaplinger. At what point did you start to notice a change in you physically, where there was something was wrong?
Yeah, I felt it, you know, in November of 17. I had taken my mother out to dinner one night, and I got home, and I was like, man, I must have ate something wrong. And then I think being in baseball, we don't sit on ailments, right? Because we have a game the next day.
What do you mean?
So like if a player comes in and says, hey, I have a sore throat, I'm not just going to say, you know what, gargle with some salt water and we'll see how it is tomorrow. Like we're going to have you checked. We're going to have the physician check you. Like we can't afford not to have you at your peak. And so I take that in my personal life. And so I was like, yeah, just my stomach doesn't really feel that great. So I talked to my doctor and I was just like, you know, something's not right. And so we did some lab testing and my liver function tests were off the chart.
What did you think when you saw that?
And I was just like, well, it's maybe some low grade, you know, gastrointestinal infection. So we tried some medications and then like a week later I talked to him. I said, doc, like, this is not good. And so then we did some more blood testing and my bilirubin was off the chart. And so we did a CT scan and the CT scan showed that there was something in the common bile duct and it thought it was like, you know, gallstones. I'm like, oh, that's easy. Just laparoscopic, you know, take it out. And our doctor, he was like, you know, I think we're probably going to need to get an MRI because the surgeons are going to want that. So let's just do that.
Was that more of a procedure than they normally would do under those circumstances? Was your doctor kind of pushing for that, or is that protocol?
Yeah, I think twofold. It's kind of protocol, but he knows how I am. And so he was like, you know, we're just going to get this MRI. Mark Neidfeld is my physician, and I think Mark had some inkling that this could be something more serious than gallstones. So we did an MRI. And then he called, and Jackie and I were sitting at the kitchen table, and he was like, I just need to come over and talk to you. So he drove over to our house, and he had a piece of paper.
Well, you had to think,
this is not good. Yeah. So he said the MRI came back, and I really think you have pancreatic cancer. And, you know.
That moment.
Yeah.
Your world must have stopped.
Yeah, it was shocking, right? I didn't think it was something as serious as pancreatic cancer. And I told Mark and Jackie, I was just like, I need a minute. I need a minute. I need to walk around the block here by myself. I need to compose myself a little bit.
Were you aware of the prognosis at that moment of most pancreatic cancer?
No.
You didn't know. You just heard the C word.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I was just like, my gosh. It was like pancreatic cancer. Oh, like, holy cow. Like, I would have never thought in a million years. I thought it was, you know, I thought it was gallstones or gallbladder and mimicked that. And yeah, Mark Neidfeld was like, you know, hey, we have some options here, right?
At what point then, since you weren't familiar with with pancreatic cancer, did you find out what the survival rate really was?
So I, in full disclosure, I went on the internet one time. That was it. I went on the internet and I searched pancreatic cancer and I saw the survival rate was 9%.
You must have been devastated.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of crying. There was a lot of Jackie being there to like, hey, we can attack this. We can see what we need to do here. Like, we need to find institutions that are the foremost leading experts in the country on pancreatic cancer. You know, we researched Cedars-Sinai. We researched MD Anderson, Mayo, Cleveland Clinic, Sloan Kettering. And after all of our research, the Medical College of Wisconsin and Dr. Doug Evans and his team are the foremost leading experts in the country.
And they are. It's amazing.
And now you
were right here.
Yeah. And we had a high schooler still, you know, so yeah. It's not like we're uprooting and going somewhere to like Houston to MD and having to be there through chemotherapy and radiation and then the Whipple procedure and then more chemo. And, you know, we could have piecemealed it together. We could have. But we found in the research, and I try to do my due diligence, I try to separate myself from being the medical professional to the patient. And that's really hard. That's really hard.
It must have taken a toll on your family.
Yeah, I think, you know, the rock of our family is Jackie. Without her, I wouldn't be here today. I would not. No chance. Zero chance. You know, our sons were super supportive. It was challenging. It was one year of treatment, surgery, all that stuff.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
They set up an office in the house before working remotely was remotely.
Roger Kaplinger reveals how he was able to keep up with his demanding schedule with the Milwaukee Brewers while undergoing treatment for pancreatic cancer.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
Let's return to our conversation with former Milwaukee Brewers Medical Director, Roger Kaplinger. What was the first option they gave you?
Doug Evans and his team, Dr. Beth Erickson, radiation oncologist, Dr. Rich, the medical oncologist, the whole MCW cancer team sits down. They call it tumor board, right? And so they look at your scans, your lab work, what clinical trials you may be eligible for in your form of cancer, of pancreatic cancer. No, it's two forms, adenocarcinoma, neoendocrine.
And which did you have?
Adenocarcinoma, which is the most common form of pancreatic cancer. You know, fortunately for me, it was in the head of my pancreas.
Now, explain what that means and why that is significant.
Yeah. So the head of your pancreas is, I guess, the best place to have it. The tail has a lot of other functions, insulin functions, digestive functions. Not that the head isn't, but I think the least amount of fatalities is in the head. And so I had that removed.
So they staged you where?
1A.
Which is early.
Super early.
I mean, that's very few pancreatic cancer patients are diagnosed with 1A.
Yeah. Well, one of our family mottos is everything happens for a reason. Everything does happen for a reason. And so I got these symptoms and acted very quickly. And we got staged. And then what's the treatment protocol? Because when my analogy is when life throws you curveballs, what do you do with the curveball? You take it or you hit it out of the park. That's what you do with curveballs. We hit it out of the park, right?
You immediately started chemo and radiation simultaneously.
Correct. That was one of the protocols of the MCW program with Dr. Evans, Dr. Susan Tsai, Dr. Beth Erickson, Dr. Rich, was to have a course of chemotherapy in conjunction with targeted radiation for 6 weeks.
And that's aggressive.
It's very aggressive, and it's cumulative, right?
So you were going to chemo how many times a week and radiation how many times?
I was going to chemo every Monday and radiation 5 days a week and working.
You were still working?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So the treatment itself, at first, how did you react to it?
I can remember sitting on the edge of the bed in Dr. Evans's wing of the Center for Advanced Care, and they were putting in my port. And I just sat on the bed crying. And that was the real moment that this is real. You know, the radiation, you don't feel it. You lay there, you listen to really cool 80s music. The techs there are awesome, you know, but it's non-invasive. But when they put the port in, like, this is real. Like, we're starting this.
That's where you had the chemo treatment.
Chemo infusion.
So yeah.
Correct.
And once a week you did that. How long was the infusion for you? When you'd go in, about an hour, or was it longer than that?
No, it was like 4 or 5 hours.
So it was a lengthy infusion every week.
Well, yeah. And so the funny thing is, in my medical brain, I would get home from chemotherapy, and we would start it at 8 or 9 in the morning, and I would just have this chemo hangover and just sleep all day. I'm like, well, this is ridiculous. Why am I doing this? Why wouldn't I just go in at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, have chemo, and then sleep it off and be ready to go the next day? And so I tried that a few times, but my platelets weren't responding very well. So we had to switch it to mornings. And so
that's interesting. Why did it work better in the morning than in the latter part of the day?
Yeah, I think sleep has a lot to do with it. Pre-treatment, that your platelets get up, but you know, during the day you're just moving about and doing your regular stuff. And so that was a little bit of a challenge with our medical oncologist to try to switch it up a little bit. But, you know, at the end of the day, you needed your platelets to be high.
You were doing that, and you said you kept up your schedule at work. How did you do that?
Yeah. You know, the Brewers were unbelievable. The team at the Brewers and all my colleagues, they actually worked around me. Like, they set up an office in the house, and, you know, that's before working remotely was remotely, right? And, you know, I would do what I could every day, still running a medical staff, but my medical teammates were unbelievable at picking me up and doing the things that we really wanted to accomplish.
Did continuing to work while you were going through chemo and radiation, do you think that helped you mentally?
Oh, absolutely.
In terms of sort of getting through this all?
Yeah, I think, you know, I didn't want to go home and just have a pity party. That's not me. That is not me. This happened for a reason. This is what we're going to do. I think Doug Evans will tell you that if people who have cancer, any form of cancer, granted, outcomes may be different, but if your attitude is that you're going to crush this, it psychologically does help.
Still ahead on WTMJ Conversations.
When they got in there to look at the hepatic artery, my saphenous vein wouldn't hold the pressure.
Former Milwaukee Brewers Medical Director Roger Kaplinger talks about undergoing one of the most invasive and complicated surgeries in medicine.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is former Milwaukee Brewers Medical Director Roger Kaplinger. Did you change physically? Did you lose your hair? Did you go through the things we normally think cancer patients go through?
My hair was thinning a little bit. I lost 50 pounds right off the get-go.
Wow.
Yeah. Dramatic.
I know you don't want to eat. You don't feel hungry when you're going through chemo.
I was the soup connoisseur of Milwaukee, I think. Jackie had tried every soup known to mankind to eat. And obviously, you know, you're after the Whipple, it's way more challenging.
And that's what I want to talk to you about. You had a Whipple procedure, which is one of the most invasive abdominal surgeries you can have. First of all, let's explain what a Whipple procedure is.
So a Whipple procedure is where they take the head of the pancreas, the common bile duct, the gallbladder, and the duodenum out. And basically, in an 8-hour procedure, reroute your plumbing.
An 8-hour surgery.
Yeah.
Which is long.
Very long. And you know, everybody's anatomy is different. Everyone has normal variants. You know, pre-surgery, we did tons of testing and scanning shows, you know, PET scans. You know, that shows where metastases could be throughout your body. It was only to the head of the pancreas, in my case. And so my hepatic artery ran through the head of my pancreas. So they had vascular surgeons ready to go to take my saphenous vein out of my left leg to patchwork it. And then they were in surgery and, you know, they would call Jackie every like, okay, hey, we're in the peritoneum with the laparoscope. So first off, is that's scary, right? Because if they put the laparoscope in your peritoneum and there's cancer cells in there, they're out. They're not moving forward. So the first call is, hey, there's no cancer in their peritoneum. We're moving forward. So that had Jackie on edge of her seat for 8 hours. But Dr. Evans' team, you know, kept updating her throughout the procedure. So when they got in there to look at the hepatic artery, my saphenous vein wouldn't hold pressure. So what Dr. Evans had to do is meticulously dissect my hepatic artery out of my head of my pancreas.
And that is more complicated, more complex than what a normal Whipple would be, too.
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
After that 8-hour surgery, and you're in recovery, and they come in and they talk to you, and as you know, you're kind of obviously you're groggy after that long. What did the doctors tell you at that point?
They told us that the surgery went well. That we still have a long road ahead. It's going to take a number of months to recover from this surgery.
What toll did that take on your body?
Oh, I took a lap around the kitchen walking, like I couldn't sit up. Like I have a scar from my sternum down through my belly button. I couldn't sit up. I couldn't sleep flat. I couldn't lay on either side. And, you know, I took a lap around the kitchen and I told Jackie, I'm like, I am gassed. Like, I'm done. And, you know, and then it's her getting, you know, now, hey, let's go out for a walk. Let's go outside. Let's, you know. And then we took an 8-week break after the Whipple.
Just to recover from the surgery.
Yeah, it was, you know, we had to go back into the hospital because we thought, you know, I told Doug Evans, I will tell you everything that's happening to me. Like, I am not going to be a hero here and say, oh, I can gut through this. So I had probably 10 days, 2 weeks after surgery, I just had this low-grade back pain. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to call Doug. And so we called Doug and said, I have this low-grade back pain. And he goes, get in here right now. So we jumped in the car, went to Frederick Medical College and did some scans. And it showed that my pancreas is like a sponge. That's the texture of it. And when you try to sew it, it doesn't always sew like skin does, like meshing together. My pancreas was overworking itself, trying to heal and leaking blood. So I had drains in me for approximately 4 or 5 weeks.
Was that one of the risks that they warned you about before you had the Whipple?
Yeah. And then I had some injections into my hip area that were not fun. That try to slow my pancreas down. And I think that the drains were more irritating to me than the surgery, you know, because Jackie had to clean them and rinse them like twice a day. And we had to measure what was coming out. We had to have pictures of what was coming out. You know, I was in the hospital for another 5 days after that because they were just trying to find if I had some infection working.
Did you ever give up and
No.
say to yourself, oh, I can't do this?
Never. You can't tell yourself that. Life is way too precious.
What kept you going?
I think, you know, our family kept us going. You know, I think the will to survive, to beat this, kept it going. I'm just not a quitter. I'm not quitting.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
We want to bring new and innovative treatments from the research lab.
Former Milwaukee Brewers Medical Director Roger Kaplinger talks about some of the advances being made in the fight against pancreatic cancer right here in Milwaukee.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back to our conversation with former Milwaukee Brewers Medical Director Roger Kaplinger. I'm your host, Libby Collins. Even after chemo, radiation, in the Whipple procedure, you continued to look for other treatments, and you got involved in some trials.
Yeah, we got involved in some trials with Dr. Susan Tsai, who's now at Ohio State. She's amazing. She's an unbelievable surgical oncologist and researcher. So we got in a clinical trial for vitamin D. We got in a clinical trial for doxycycline, which they use for acne medicines. They thought that in rat models that that would help cancer T cells. We also did, at Jackie's urging, because I was kind of like, okay, I'm done with trials here. We have one of the 8 LINAC MRIs here at the medical college in the world. And Dr. Beth Erickson was like, hey, I really want to put you in this LINAC MRI trial. It's every Thursday. Like, we just want to make sure that we have our physicist, our radiation oncologist, to understand how when you're in the LINAC and your organs are moving all the time, your diaphragm's moving up and down with breathing, we want to make sure that we can use this LINAC MRI for targeted radiation, like better than a CT or any other radiation that we currently have. And I was like, I don't think I'm going to do that. And Jackie was like, you're going to do that? Because you may need this again. What if your pancreatic cancer comes back? Or better yet, how are you going to help other people? And so we did the LINAC MRI clinical trial.
Is that what kept you looking for more answers when you're going through these trials? Was it, I want to get better myself, or was it, I really want to help others?
I think it's both. It's twofold, right? It's when you get a diagnosis in a disease like cancer, it's never why me, why not me, what can I do to only help myself, but to pay it forward with other people. And we know that pancreatic cancer survival rates are almost the lowest of any kind of cancer. And we want to bring awareness. We want to bring education. We want to bring new and innovative treatments from the patient's bedside, from the research lab. That takes an extraordinarily long time to get that moving.
And that's an important part of this story. Because as we said at the beginning, what was it, a 9% survival mm-hmm. when you first checked, when you were given the diagnosis? And it's improving. Every year, we're seeing a slight increase in survival rates for pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with some of the things you experienced.
Yeah, I think the Susan B. Komen Foundation has done an unbelievable job in breast cancer. That's not a death wish anymore. Colon cancer, not a death wish anymore. I think things that we talk about in pancreatic cancer is we need to get an affordable test to preemptively look for this disease, whether it be, you know, we have really good genetic testing now, right? So you have to put that genetic testing, family history, and hopefully a blood test at some point in time that's affordable to look at tumor markers or precursors to this disease. I think once our scientists and researchers figure that out, those survival rates are going to astronomically increase.
You talk to a lot of the doctors who are working on just that. How close are they to finding a test that could possibly have early diagnosis for pancreatic cancer?
I think they're close, but yet far away. I think they have to make it affordable, right? Yeah, there's a multitude of factors here that's involved. It's creating the test, creating the validity of the test, as well as talking to insurance company to say, will you pay for this? Because let's say the test costs $10,000. Well, there may be socioeconomic issues that people can't pay $10,000, for instance.
Well, isn't with pancreatic cancer, isn't there a genetic component to this? Had somebody in your family had it before?
No. All of my genetic markers are negative for pancreatic cancer. I'm just got lucky.
But I'm sure you're concerned about your sons and future grandchildren.
Yeah, they all need to get genetic tested. They have gotten genetic tested. Yeah, it's you know, like doing your annual physical. You hate to do it and you hate to schedule it, but it's one of the most important things you can do in your healthcare is to be an advocate for your own healthcare. as well as taking your health seriously to say, I'm going to do everything I can because I only got one shot at this. Some of us have two shots at life, right? But most of us have one shot. And let's try to do everything we can to figure this out because medical technology is unbelievable.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
After pancreatic cancer, we're still ready for the battle, right? We're ready for whatever life throws at us every day.
Former Milwaukee Brewers Medical Director Roger Kaplinger talks about how he and his family are battle ready in the fight against pancreatic cancer.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
I'm Libby Collins. Today's conversation is with Roger Kaplinger. He spent 33 years as medical director for the Milwaukee Brewers. A real milestone for anyone who's had cancer is that five-year mark.
Yeah.
And you've passed it.
Yeah.
You're what? Almost
six.
But close to 7 years.
Yeah. It was six in February.
Okay. So another 6 months, you're going to be a seven-year survivor, which 20 years ago, you were a unicorn.
Yeah. You know, we have a woman at the Sina Magowitz Foundation, KK. She's a 30-year survivor.
That's amazing.
She's the unicorn, right?
You mentioned the Sina Magowitz Foundation.
Yeah.
And I know you're working with them a lot.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Doug Evans has turned me on to Roger Magowitz and his story of his mother passing away and him devoting a lot of time and effort to the Sina Magowitz Foundation to find a cure for this disease. And, you know, Roger and I have, I call him Big Roger. Big Roger and I have had numerous conversations about how we attack this disease, how we can raise money and gifts to the Medical College of Wisconsin to understand how we can eradicate it and how we can come up with that testing that we can preemptively look at people and tell them that you have some factors that predispose you to this. You know, we get numbers from the Le Bon Pancreatic Cancer Program, you know, with radiation, chemo, surgery, everybody that comes in after 40 months, we have a 30% survival rate. That leads the world.
Yeah, and years ago, that wouldn't be the case.
It's triple the national average.
That's amazing.
The work that the Medical College of Wisconsin and Le Bon Pancreatic Cancer Program is underrated. We need to promote that, and that's what Roger Magowitz and myself and Doug Evans and Dr. Daniel Von Hoff, who is in Phoenix, who runs TGen. You know, he's kind of the godfather of medical oncology and pancreatic cancer. He's getting ready to retire. But, you know, handing the torch to Doug and his group, we're going to keep pushing forward with this.
You said a while ago that your family motto is everything happens for a reason. Why do you think this happened to you?
I'm not sure. You know what? But the good Lord blessed me with this. You know, our family understands what our pillars of our family are, right? It's everything happens for a reason. We never settle for mediocrity. We always strive for excellence. Our motto for pancreatic cancer is battle ready. We're ready for the battle every day. That's why we still wear these bracelets. That's why all of our family has battle ready tattooed on their wrist in my handwriting. Because after pancreatic cancer, we're still ready for the battle, right? We're ready for whatever life throws at us every day. And that's what we have instilled in our children.
Are you fearful there might come a day that the doctor's going to say it's back?
No, I'm not fearful. You know what? It's another curveball. If it comes back, it comes back. If I know that I have to do everything in my power to be on top of that, you know, Dr. Evans and I have this banter every time I go in there to get checked. Well, you know, you're a six-year survivor now. We can probably check you every year or so. Nope, we're not doing that, Doc. We've whittled it down to 8 months, right? It was every 4 months. Like, I just don't want to miss something if I have control of that. And so I'm not fearful of that. It's if the good Lord throws that curveball at us again, we need to hit it.
We've been talking with Roger Kaplinger, the former medical director for the Milwaukee Brewers. He spent over 33 years with the team. And then one day, he faced that diagnosis of having pancreatic cancer. He survived well over 6 years, and he's thriving and helping others through the Sina Magowitz Foundation. Now, if you joined us late and you want to hear our entire conversation with Roger, go to WTMJ.com and share today's show with your friends and family. You'll also find a partial transcript courtesy of eCourt Reporters. For WTMJ Conversations, I'm Libby Collins.